On Point is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston. The program is made possible by your financial support. Please pledge online at WBUR.org.
From WBUR Boston, I'm Jane Clayson in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. The Oscar winners will be announced at the 79th Annual Academy Awards this Sunday, concluding a fierce fight to take home the hardware. Will the big winners be kings or queens, beauty pageant contestants or Japanese generals? We'll turn to some critics to sort it all out. This hour, On Point, predicting Oscar winners and losers and looking behind the scenes at the awards battle. Joining me now from Culver City, California, is David Carr, media critic for The New York Times. He's been following the blow-by-blow of this year's Oscar campaigning with his Carpetbagger blog on the Times website. Nice to have you, David.
Oh, happy Oscar weekend, Jane.
To you, too. Joining me from Denver, Colorado, is Lisa Kennedy, film critic for The Denver Post. Great to have you, Lisa.
Thank you so much, Jane. Good to be here.
And joining me from Hanover, New Hampshire, Jack Beatty, On Point news analyst and senior editor at The Atlantic Monthly. Jack, hello again.
Hello, Jane, David, and Lisa.
I want to start our roundtable by asking David Carr to start us off here about the buzz in Hollywood. What's going on there before the big night, David?
Well, it's a little bit of a movable feast. I went to three different parties last night, and I would say the black cars and the hotels and every available hospitality spot is just about sold out. Oscar weekend, which is kind of a little bit of a gated community. I feel like I'm a lawn jockey standing outside it, is in fullest swing. Mm.
Lisa Kennedy, a very diverse group of nominees this year, and really no 800-pound gorilla in the race. How does the slate of films this year compare to years past?
Well, I certainly think that in some ways it seems a little bit softer than, for instance, last year, but I think that's a taste thing for me. I expected, headed into the Academy Awards this year, that there were going to be more studio pictures, and it just didn't happen. So I think they're good films, and I don't think that's, you know, I like that there isn't necessarily an 800-pound gorilla, because guess what? There are enough 800-pound gorillas in the performance categories that there's got to be some tension someplace. Mm. And that it's at the Best Picture slot is kind of fascinating, I think.
Well, let's start out with the Best Picture category. Five nominees, of course: Babel, The Departed, Letters from Iwo Jima, Little Miss Sunshine, and The Queen. Thoughts about these pictures, and maybe a pick from each of you. David Carr, you first.
I went with The Departed for Best Picture, and I did a great deal of reporting that all came to naught. None of the phone calls that I made, some to Academy members, some to Oscar marketers, usually they'll thread up a certain way and help you guide. I pretty much came down to a coin flip. I was thinking Departed a month ago, and I'm sticking with it, but I would put zero money behind it.
Well, you like The Departed. Let's listen to a clip from it. In this scene, Martin Scorsese's latest crime thriller and the movie that may finally win him an Oscar, Leonardo DiCaprio plays a desperate undercover cop who's gotten in too deep with the mob. Here he gets some bad news from his superiors in the police department, played by Mark Wahlberg and Martin Sheen.
When are you going to take Costello, huh? I mean, what are you waiting for, honestly? I mean, do you want him to chop me up and feed me to the poor? Is that what you guys want?
Yeah, well, that might stick.
You shut up. We are building a case, and it takes time. You know that.
Something's wrong. I'm telling you, something's wrong.
Yeah, maybe.
Look, I think Costello's got a spy inside the Special Investigation Unit.
You serious?
I'm afraid so. Hang tight for me, kid. Just a little while longer. We are this close. You ready?
Lisa Kennedy, David Carr likes Departed. Do you agree?
You know, I agree with David that it was just like a coin toss. Absolutely. But I think that I'm imagining the sort of strange thing where Little Miss Sunshine may surprise or be the spoiler in some sense for Best Picture, because it's one of those films a little bit like Crash, where I feel like people really with not a lot of help from the critics necessarily, though critics like this film, people sort of took to this film themselves and sort of discovered it. And I know that it's not a People's Choice Award, but I do think that that's part of the reason that Crash was such a success last year and surprised us at the Academy Award. And this is, you know, I think Little Miss Sunshine has that same sort of force where people are like, I loved it, you know. And so I think that possibly Little Miss Sunshine will surprise people.
All right. Well, let's listen to a clip. It's vying for best film, as you say, over a family dinner. In this clip, 7-year-old Olive, played by Abigail Breslin, asks her uncle, played by Steve Carroll, why he has bandages on his wrists. Olive's mother, Toni Collette, and father, Greg Kinnear, jump into the conversation. Here we go.
How did it happen?
How did what happen?
Your accident.
Honey, here. Oh, no. It's okay. Unless you object.
No, I'm pro-honesty here. I just think, you know, it's up to you.
Be my guest.
Olive, Uncle Frank didn't really have an accident. What happened was he tried to kill himself.
You did? Why?
I'm sorry. I don't think this is an appropriate conversation. Honey, let's let Uncle Frank finish his dinner, okay? Shh.
Why did you want to kill yourself?
No, don't answer the question, Frank.
Richard.
Don't answer it.
Richard.
You're not going to answer the question, Frank.
I wanted
Richard.
To kill myself.
Don't listen to him.
Richard.
Because I was
very
He's
unhappy.
A sick man. He's a sick in his head man.
Richard.
But I'm sorry. I don't think it's an appropriate conversation for a 7-year-old.
Well, she's going to find out anyway.
Oh, okay.
Go on, Frank.
Why were you unhappy?
Well, there were a lot of reasons. Mainly, though, I fell in love with someone who didn't love me back.
Who?
One of my grad students. I was very much in love with him.
Him? It was a boy? You fell in love with the boy?
Yes, I did. Very much so.
That's silly.
You're right. It was silly. It was very, very silly.
Lisa Kennedy, why Little Miss Sunshine? What about that movie?
Well, you're not, I mean, the question is why I think the Academy would pick it. I think that people really have connected with the dysfunction, and that ensemble is extraordinary. And that, again, sort of gets a little bit of that Crash thing going on. I think that also, because we're saying it's a toss-up, I think other people feel like they're, like, sort of trying to figure out, should it be this, should it be that, and that things are going to get split. And I just keep thinking that maybe Little Miss Sunshine is going to win because there's sort of an emotional connection to it. And it was a kind of a joy ride, a sort of dark and disturbing one at times. But there's a lot of, like, people really love it, I think. And I think that that's a legitimate thing when you're looking for a best picture. Not because, I mean, I don't think The Departed or Little Miss Sunshine are the best crafted pictures in this category, but that's not what we want to figure out. So,
Jack Beatty, weigh in on this. What do you think?
Well, first to The Departed, I think in that clip you heard one of the things that I find ludicrous about the film, and that is there's an affliction of bad, broad Boston accents. I packed my car in Harvard Yard. I didn't know what I did with it, and I put it in Method, and I'm going, I mean, my God, they're all doing the Boston thing. I'm hearing my native patois mangled. And, you know, if you compare this film to the Chinese original on which it's based, I think that was something like 44 minutes shorter and vastly more entertaining. And this, Scorsese has this, and the other thing we heard in that clip was how slow it is. And then to have Jack Nicholson, this crime boss, dead in a cruciform, you know, his arms thrown back as if on a cross. And then the movie was obvious and unsubtle, and I think it's one of the worst of the Scorsese films, bloated and unbelievable. And to contrast the kinds of performances, these big name actors, Jack Nicholson chewing the scenery. Look at Babel by contrast, where a Moroccan carpenter, an actual carpenter, played the father of some kids. Believable, real, authentic, everything that The Departed is not. And as for Little Miss Sunshine, I thought it was a laughless and finally depraved movie. You know, we have this whole phenomenon of the JonBenet Ramsey thing. It wasn't just that she was murdered. It's that there were this ghoulish right in America where these little girls are paraded in beauty contests, all tarted up. And I thought the movie was going to show that for what it was. Instead, the director says, not only will Little Miss Sunshine and her performance tart it up, she'll trump all the tarts with a sort of striptease dance. I couldn't believe I was watching what I was watching.
You know, let's go back to Martin Scorsese for a minute in The Departed, because David Carr, this is his seventh nomination, correct?
After that's my guess.
Six past nominations. Is it finally his year? He didn't run a campaign this year to win, did he?
He ran the non-campaign campaign. He stayed out in the weeds, kept his head down. In years past, he's swanned about and made it clear that he very much would like to wipe out his reputation as an Oscar bridesmaid. This year, I think out of superstition as much as anything, but there was something tactical to it. He just kept his head down, and I think it's going to work. I think he'll get a Best Director Oscar.
You have to look like you don't want to win, Lisa Kennedy. Is that the trick with the Academy?
So I've heard. I don't actually understand entirely. I look to David sometimes to sort of suss out what the Academy actually thinks. But I do think that this is the year where they can, like it or not, they can give it to him. I've always thought this was a done deal in terms of Best Director.
Lots of racial diversity this year in the nomination process. Of the 20 acting nominations, I think there were 8. Is that right, David, that were somewhat racially diverse?
That would be my count, but I was a liberal arts major, so you should not trust my math.
Is Oscar finally colorblind, would you say?
I think this year was a pretty vivid demonstration that the performance will carry the votes, and people don't care whether it's a young Japanese woman who they've never seen before or a veteran Latina actress who made her bones in telenovelas in Mexico. They are able to discern and look at. It's funny, though. A lot of the nominated actors are not in films that were nominated themselves. So people were, in the instance of Forrest Whitaker, they were able to separate the performance and the movie. I mean, Last King of Scotland didn't get much in the way of nominations. And we all know what happened to Dreamgirls in terms of Best Picture, which I think really altered the race.
You mentioned Forrest Whitaker. Let's play a clip from the movie Last King of Scotland. In this scene from the movie, Whitaker executes a sudden turn from menacing to charming as he confronts a Scottish doctor played by James McAvoy.
Who are you?
Nicholas. I'm Dr. Nicholas Garrigan. I work at the medical compound in Magambo. I'm a doctor.
You are British.
Well, I'm Scottish.
Yeah,
I'm Scottish.
Scottish?
Yeah.
Why didn't you say so? I fought with the Scots against the Mau Mau. Great soldiers. Very brave. And good people. Completely. Let me tell you, if I could be anything instead of a Ugandan, I would be a Scot.
Like, really?
Except for the red hair, which I'm sure is attractive to your women, but which we Africans, we find this quite disgusting. Thank you, Dr. Garrigan. A very good job.
Lisa Kennedy, what do you think? Forrest Whitaker, a shoe-in? What about Peter O'Toole in the same category for Venus? What, has he been overlooked 7 times before?
I believe so.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm hoping that it isn't one of those sentimental votes. I actually think that Forrest Whitaker should carry right through, as he has for pretty much the beginning of the awards season. I think that is a very strong performance in a film that I'm not particularly fond of. I don't think the film is as deep as it needed to be. But at the same time, the Peter O'Toole performance, lovely, and a film that I think is even less deep than The Last King of Scotland. So I'm sort of hoping that Forrest Whitaker just plows on through like he has thus far.
Yeah,
Gene,
David Carr, go ahead.
Yeah. I saw Peter O'Toole last night, and he was, I asked him if he was getting a little tired of showing up here and there, and he was dressed head to toe in this gorgeous white suit, had the kerchief, the ever-present glass of wine. He says, "Do I look like I'm having a good time?" And I said, "Yes, you do." That's exactly the point, isn't it?
Well, I saw in the wee hours of the morning last night, Ryan Gosling in Half Nelson, a remarkable and disturbing performance. He plays a history teacher in an urban school who really is quite an extraordinary teacher, who's also a drug addict. He's a crack addict. and the pathos of his relationship with a 13-year-old girl in the class who really is poised on perhaps getting into that world, and who in the end and is also befriending him and trying to save him. It is a disturbing and poignant and I think really powerful, idiosyncratic performance by Ryan Gosling here. An actor with a big future, I'm convinced.
Let's listen, Jack Beatty, to this clip from Ryan Gosling in Half Nelson.
What's up?
Okay, look, I hate to be this guy right now, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I need you to stay away from Dre.
Excuse me?
You heard me, okay? So just do me this solid, all right, man? Please.
Do you solid?
You know what I'm saying. You understand.
Oh, so this like stay away from the girl, she's too precious kind of
I'm not kidding.
Oh, I know.
So you understand?
Look, man, Dre is my family. She's my friend, man. All these cats, these are my friends. Now, would you like to be my friend, man?
Let's turn to the women for a moment, if we will, in the best actress category. Meryl Streep, Helen Mirren, Judi Dench, among them, all actresses of a certain age, if you will, for this year at least. Seems like great roles are still available for the women, Lisa Kennedy.
Well, still available. I think it's more like, wow, how did this happen? And can we sort of make this a sea change of sorts, too? Because, yeah, these are really quite wonderful roles for women. But they're almost all, you know, the truth is, performance now is really dictated by independent film, where I think people go to find good material because no one's making it, or especially for women, writing it in Hollywood enough. So that's part of what we're seeing in the performance category, is just like actresses going to the independent cinema to get the kinds of gritty roles they need to like show us how good they can be.
Let's listen to Helen Mirren from The Queen. This is a clip. As the Queen, she struggles to find the right response to Princess Diana's death. Here's an excerpt from the film's trailer.
No member of the royal family will speak publicly about this.
Diana's no longer a member of the royal family.
What are you talking about?
Charles, this is a private matter.
We do things in this country quietly, with dignity.
Will someone please save these people from themselves?
Questions are being asked about why the Queen hasn't addressed her subjects at this time of national grief.
The Prime Minister for you, ma'am.
You've seen today's papers. 70% of people believe that your actions have damaged the monarchy.
Who does he think he's talking to?
Can you imagine I'm going to drop everything and come down to London before I attend to my grandchildren? Then you're mistaken.
David Carr, New York Times. Is Helen Mirren the favorite in this category for Best Actress? And what about Queen for Best Picture?
She certainly looks like one. At the same party, Peter O'Toole was at Miramax, which made both Venus and the Queen was throwing a party. I said, I'm sure you're very fatigued about swanning about. And she said, I'm a Leo, David. We never tire of swanning about. And I think that she's got one last trip up to the podium. It's a very strong category. My favorite performance of the year, Kate Winslet in Little Children, will not probably win an Oscar, but I thought what she did with that role was extraordinary. And it's a movie that I think people just really didn't see. If they had, she might have a little bit more of a shot.
Some people are talking this year about a sea change. You mentioned that, Lisa Kennedy, for a moment, as far as the global themes of the pictures that the Academy has to look at, the diverse themes of the movies. What do the nominations say about the evolution of the Academy, if anything, this year?
Well, that's a good question. I think that it says that the Academy is getting younger. There are some people in the Academy that actually move back and forth between, as do the actors, between sort of independent cinema and also major studio pictures, and that these are the kinds of things that make people sort of more aware of where interesting stories are happening, too. I mean, at some degree, there's the feeling that Hollywood still doesn't tell stories, the big studios don't tell stories that haven't been told before. I mean, even The Departed is a story that's been told before in another country better. So I think that people are becoming sort of more sophisticated about where really great stories can come from and what interesting filmmaking come from. Obviously, the Spanish language films, you know, Pan's Labyrinth and also Babel, that Babel is in the Best Picture category. I think that's really exciting. It does feel like something different's happening, or may it just been this year there's a really strong slate of films.
Let's listen to a clip from Babel. It's been mentioned here many times. The drama starring Brad Pitt, Kate Blanchett, up for Best Picture, about characters in four different countries. An errant gunshot in this scene sets off a worldwide chain reaction. Here's the trailer.
the spirit of man could accomplish. The Lord said, let us go down and confuse their language so that they may not understand one another's speech.
I need to call my embassy.
Where are you?
Where are we? I don't know.
The shooting of an American tourist has sparked an international incident.
It's all over the news. Everybody is paying attention. We're doing everything we can.
I want to talk to the kids. I'm going to talk to them.
This is an emergency. Cancel your son's wedding.
Can anyone come to take care of the kids?
Listen, this is urgent, okay?
The sheer number of global films, David Carr, this being a look at globalism, is there, you know, the Academy's rap being elitist and stodgy. Is this indicative of a true change?
I have to say, you know, after Crash winning, a lot of people would suggest that Babel is Crash with the passport. It's a prismatic ensemble piece that's threaded to a certain degree, but requires a little bit of assembly as a moviegoer once you hit the sidewalk. I think it's an incredibly ambitious film, and I'm in agreement with Lisa in that I think that the Academy is a far less predictable bunch than they used to be, and all of these sort of precursor in history and all the things that people touch may not be all that relevant as the demographics of the Academy changes.
Let's go to the phones. Daniel is calling from Somerville, Massachusetts. Hello, Daniel. You're on the air.
Hi, Jane. I think that The Departed and Martin Scorsese's apparent, certain victory is the ultimate example of this longtime Oscar penchant for not giving awards to films and directors that truly deserve them, then sort of getting guilty and giving them to lesser projects. I really think that The Departed was this grotesque, cartoonish movie. I think movie critics loved it way beyond what it deserved, mainly because Martin Scorsese has not gotten an Oscar and he needs a comeback. And I just think it's blown everything out of proportion. I mean, I think it's really interesting that even though Scorsese has never won an Oscar, he has been nominated for, I would say, four mediocre pictures, mm-hmm. The Aviator, Gangs of New York, I think The Age of Innocence, The Last Temptation of Christ. His best films were nominated, you know, Goodfellas but, you know, After Hours, The King of Comedy, Taxi Driver, Alice Doesn't Live Here Anymore, Mean Streets, all not nominated. And I think that this penchant for guilt, like, oh, we need to give the hero his due, is sort of skewed everything this year.
Yeah, and,
Daniel,
you know,
thanks.
There's another aspect to this, and that is, and I think you put your finger on it, Daniel, the critics really set this man up. They overpraise his films consistently, and I think partly out of this, we owe him one. And this film, especially, I couldn't agree with you more that it was a cartoon, and as I said earlier, to look at the Chinese original is to see a real thriller. But he has been cosseted and sort of blanded from the, you know, he's been overpraised for years now, and the result is he doesn't discipline his talent. This bloated film, you know, he just can't, every scene goes on too long. And to end a film like this with a picture, it's all about rats, it's all about, you know, people that squeal, to end the picture with a rat crawling across the screen on a window ledge, Martin, what are you thinking of? You're a great student of film. Why are you doing this kind of cartoonish business? One of the reasons is the critics just lavish the praise on him.
I need to push back on that little bit. I didn't pick The Departed because it was my favorite film. I picked it because I think it has a shot at winning. But real, actual moviegoers experienced Departed in a different way. They didn't think about the Japanese original. They didn't think about it that it was 40 minutes too long. They didn't place it in Mr. Scorsese's oeuvre. They sat down with a big bucket of jumbo popcorn and watched a movie that got up and got moving. I don't agree that it's a slow film. And among other things, finally got to see what the big deal was about Leo DiCaprio, who I've never been able to understand as a big actor. And in this movie, he made sense, and I thought did a good job. And if the movie was as odious and horrible as both Daniel and Jack think, why did all these people go to see it, and why did it get nominated for Best Picture? I don't think it's a terrible film. I don't think it's Martin Scorsese's best, but it's got its merits.
Lisa Carr, back to the caller's point about this notion of holdover Oscar. Are there any other awards that should have been previously given but were overlooked?
Well, I don't know, overlooked, but it's, to me, the Peter O'Toole, I know he's been on a charm offensive, and I think he's a lovely guy, and I like that performance a lot in Venus. But to me, this is sort of an example of the potential for a sort of sentimental vote happening and giving someone the Academy Award over Forrest Whitaker because it's time for it to happen, you know. And the funny thing is, I always felt with The Departed, I keep sort of going, I really hope it doesn't get Best Picture because it's so not the Best Picture. It's not even Martin Scorsese's Best Picture. But I've really made my peace with him getting Best Director because there is this sort of, I'm absolutely right, Jack's actually absolutely right, that there's this sort of penchant, this sort of guilt penchant to be like, okay, let's finally give it to him. I can live with that even if I think it's not quite the way that people should vote. But that's because I think that the Academy Awards always have loony voting that has nothing to do with what is quote-unquote best.
Back to the phones. Alicia is calling from Newton, Massachusetts. Alicia, hi. You're on the line.
Oh, my goodness. Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I was calling because I basically think that The Departed was completely overdone and beat your head over a frying pan, and I would love to see more subtlety in pictures, and I agree with Jack Beatty and his discussion of the film. It's just enough already. We have brains.
Jack?
You know, isn't that right? And the funny part about it is Scorsese has brains. He is an inspired critic and historian of American film. He can describe scenes from John Ford Westerns of 45 years ago. He knows about the film stocks. He lives in film history. And yet, his talent tends toward the operatic, toward the overstated, toward the, you know, big stagey thing. And I think it's a real shame. He needs to bring his intelligence, I think, to his work,
Lisa,
more than he does.
Lisa Kennedy, I read that you want Scorsese to win the Oscar just because you want to hear his speech.
I am sort of intrigued because he's been very quiet. I mean, this sort of notion that it's like you can get it if you sort of hush. I'm very intrigued by this. And I was looking for quotes about the Academy Award and having lost and lost and lost. And, you know, he isn't Susan Lucci. He hasn't actually been sort of talking about it very much recently. And I am kind of intrigued to see what he says, in part because of what Jack said. He's such an intelligent guy about film history and cinematic history and his awareness. I'd sort of be intrigued to see what kind of grace and what kind of crankiness arise when he gets the award, if he gets the award.
I wanted to ask you, David Carr, about the business of Oscar. How much money are we talking about this year as compared to years past?
Well, there's been a trend, oddly enough, as the ratings for Oscars have gone down. A number of media outlets, including the one I work for, have sort of indexed into the awards. We do a separate Oscar blog. The LA Times is doing not only an Oscar blog, but now has a special section. There were 2,000 reporters at the Golden Globes, and the whole heaving apparatus of Oscar marketing. I think the LA Times 3 years ago, in a story by Michael Sipley, estimated that $700 million gets pumped into the economy from the Oscars. And as Stephen Frears, who directed The Queen, told me last night, if you find the purpose of all of this, let me know. He just looked at it as a curious American custom, a loud noise banging, signifying not very much.
You talk about
inevitably a boring show.
Don't remind us, Jack.
What an ordeal that show is. Oh.
You talk about, David, 2,000 reporters at the Golden Globe. Talk a little bit about the red carpet ritual at the Oscars ceremony. And it is a ritual.
I wrote a piece for Sunday that was about standing on the red carpet. And of course, there's a kind of faux intimacy that occurs. I didn't actually stand on it. Of course, I stood adjacent to it behind a hedge or a rope. And there's this feeling that we're actually having a transaction. That's what the public is buying into. Of course, we're having nothing of the sort. There's an exchange of brands underway, media apparatus, 24-hour news needs famous faces. The famous faces need to show up to put, you know, some butts in the seat. And so there's this, you know, there's this temporary community where we all come together and make like we're friends. And, of course, we're nothing of the kind. Business is being conducted out there.
Let's go to the phones again, this time in Danbury, Connecticut. Nina is calling. Hi, Nina, you're on the air.
Hi, hello, Jane and everyone. I have some quick questions. Two movies that have affected me a lot were Letters from Iwo Jima and also Stranger Than Fiction. I don't know what competition, that's in, if any. But my question about The Departed is how important, and with regard to any of the movies, how important are the criteria such as audience favor and commercial success and director personality and cult, whatever, status? How important are those criteria in determining the Oscars? I would imagine they're pretty important.
Good question, Nina. Let's ask Lisa Kennedy, director, personality, commercial success. How important is that?
Well, I certainly think that it's turning out to some degree. If they're not from the independent world, maybe commercial success doesn't matter as much. But if they are from studios and they don't, they underperform. And I'm thinking to some degree, even though Letters from Iwo Jima's on here, the sort of buzz for it has been really quite different than the critical buzz for it. And I think there's a really lovely, ambitious, and smart film. So I think that all these things sort of come together. But I always look, like I said, David's the one who really gets what the Academy thinks, what the members think. I sort of look at these things and go, Stranger Than Fiction was the number one film on my list last year as an interesting studio film that I just connected to and thought was smart and well acted and all these things. And I kept going, how come there's not an Academy like push for this? And part of it is because it really died fairly quickly for a film that had the kind of, that had Will Ferrell in it, basically, doing a good job for all those people like me who don't actually like Will Ferrell normally. So,
Lisa, you bring up Iwo Jima. The caller did as well. Jack Beatty, I want you to weigh in on that movie because I know you have thoughts about it.
Well, I do. It certainly was moving. I agree with our caller. But, it was the characters were depicted with unrelenting nobility. And I'm sure there were noble people there. But the fact is that the commander there, Kuribayashi, had a chest full of medals. And I checked into it. He served in China. Now, what happened in China? Well, something like 5 million civilians were killed over 5 years by the Japanese army. Why were they killed? Out of racial motives. Racialism was at the absolute center of the Japanese military adventure. And this movie, we don't hear any of that. And the one character who could bring that out, a member of the sort of cadre, the Kempeitai back in Japan, who could spout out some of that, turns out he's so good he wouldn't even shoot a dog. And I thought, this is a movie made by an American conservative that really could have been made by a Japanese right-wing nationalist. How noble we were in the war. We fought so bravely. And the fact is, the Second World War was about something. And one of the things it was about was Japanese racialism and the view that other peoples were vermin who could be exterminated. And this movie just glosses all that out in a kind of moral equivalence. We kill prisoners, they kill prisoners. And you would never have heard of anything like the Rape of Nanking from some of you. It's unimaginable that these noble people could have done it. So I find it, as I do so many Hollywood films, an evasion of the real issues, which are much more profound of history, to get this kind of moral equivalence of, well, we're all soldiers together and so on.
Back to the phones. Robin is calling from Columbia, South Carolina. Robin, hello.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
Thank you for taking the call. The connection's kind of iffy, but this is an industry patting itself on the back, and that's fine. But how do we rank first, second, third when we're talking about an art form? You like one, I like another one. And who's to say, and why should we try to make one of us right?
Robin, thank you. David Carr, it is so subjective, isn't it?
That's precisely, I think, why it rivets people so much. It combines sports, competition, business. It's a nexus of all the things Americans care about.
Barrington, Rhode Island. Andrew, you're on the line. Andrew,
hi.
Hello.
Yes, thanks for taking my call. Can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead.
I wanted to listen to you speak. I found myself mostly in agreement with Jack, and I wanted to know what he thought of United 93, which came out, I guess, too early in the year to actually be considered for the Oscars this last year. I thought that was the most original and moving film that I saw
Andrew, thank you. Jack
Beatty,
what did you think?
Well, actually, Paul Greengrass's film is nominated. It's the fifth one on my list here, so it is nominated. And I agree with you. I think that, for one thing, that was the most brilliantly edited film I have seen in years, the way just one scene would elide into the other. Second, he used unknown actors, and what a difference that makes. It conveys authenticity and realness. And third, it was moving. By gosh, what these people did, the stewardesses, the bravery displayed, nothing overdone, and even the terrorists, given their due, it was, I thought, a remarkable film, and no one could, I wept, I think everyone who saw it did, and an extraordinary, I think, work of cinematic art.
Turn to the film, foreign film category. There are serious films this year in that category. Lisa Kennedy, you like one in particular.
Well, I'm still quite the fan and have been since I saw it in Toronto of Pan's Labyrinth. I just think that the marshalling that Guillermo del Toro, the director, does of the sort of horror genre, which he's worked before, with this story about fascist Spain and a little girl and this sort of fantasy aspect that's almost like a kind of very, very, very dark Wizard of Oz. I just have always loved it, though. This is one of these categories where there are a number of films that if they won, as much as I love Pan's Labyrinth, I would still honor every one of them. They are very, this is the best category in the Academy Awards this year, in my opinion.
David, do you agree?
I couldn't agree more. I think in terms of the movies that are really exciting, that get you tilted forward in your seat, The Lives of Others, Pan's Labyrinth, are remarkable looking. Their use of narrative, their use of, you know, polar opposites in terms of storytelling approach. And as Jack pointed out, there's been some ambition elsewhere, United 93. It's Paul Greengrass, the director, that's nominated, not the film. But if you're really looking for movies that are going to leave you just the tiniest bit changed when you walked away, I think it's going to be the ones with subtitles on the bottom.
or yes, and one that isn't nominated, I think, and I was wrong. I'm sorry, I read that too quickly. It's true. It's the best director for United 93. But to me, the best film of the year, and one of the great films, is Deepa Mehta's Water, the end of her trilogy about India. And this one is about a home where widows are sent and have to spend the rest of their lives. A child is sent there to spend the rest of her life in this wretched little home, and it turns out this is not done for religious reasons, but to cut these women out of the family wills. And it's a hard and tough and yet beautiful film. And there's a poignant moment where the little girl is talking about reincarnation, coming back, and another woman who's been an inmate of this institution for years said, "Just pray you don't come back as a woman."
It's an amazing movie, Jack is right, and it is nominated. Yeah. It's actually the submission from Canada, oddly enough.
Mm. Well, I'm delighted.
Chelsea is calling from Medford, Massachusetts. Chelsea, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
One of the things that really surprised me this year about the Best Adapted Screenplay category was the lack of recognition for The Prestige. And I can understand why it didn't get nominated for Best Picture. I know it was probably a little too pop. But if you look at what Nolan did with the source material, it was pretty incredible. And I'd love to get some insight from your panelists as to why it didn't get recognized in this category.
David Carr, you chose The Departed for Best Adapted Screenplay. What do you think?
Well, I think The Prestige in general had as Lisa's pointed out, the commercial life of a film is not determinant, but it has an impact. And I think part of what happened is The Prestige, which was a good but a little bit confused movie, at least, and I'm speaking as a consumer, not a critic. I think that the screenplay was an amazing, amazing document, but it was sitting behind a movie that people didn't just love.
Back to the phones. Ted is calling from Somerville, Massachusetts. Ted, you're on the air.
Hi there. Hi, Jane. Thank
Hi.
You for my call.
Sure.
I had a very visceral reaction to two of the contenders, and I don't know if this has been discussed, but I thought that on the one hand, Babel was all slick surface and no guts to speak of, a bit of a fraud. And I thought that on the other hand, The Lies of Others, the German film, was so beautifully made, and that you absolutely live in East Berlin and in these characters, and that includes the Stasi agent. I just want to put that out there.
Thank you, Ted. Lisa Kennedy, do you want to jump in, The Lives of Others?
Well, I'm certainly not going to argue about The Lives of Others being really quite astonishing. That's a debut feature, and what Donnersmarck, the director, writer-director, did with that film is absolutely, it's so subtle. And I think part of the argument may be that, you know, doing these ensemble pieces that have so many parts, these sort of assembly films that have so many parts, sometimes really does sever you. It can actually sever you from the narrative and the sort of connection with people. And The Lives of Others is a very... it stays with its characters in this way that is so intimate, and the shifts and the possibility, the arcs of change, of ethical, moral change, are really subtle and deserved. I think you sort of, your experience of it, it's like that you believe it. And I think he's right about that. The funny thing is, I happen to really love a lot of Babel. I never thought it was like the perfect film overall, but it has some moments that I think are deeply, deeply moving and deeply, deeply human. So I didn't have the same all gloss at all. I actually think that's, there are like five instances in that movie where I'm like, that's not gloss, that's profound. So,
What about Dreamgirls, to insert a movie of great commercial success? 8 nominations total, no Best Picture nod, a bit of a surprise. And what about the former American Idol contestant Jennifer Hudson's performance, All the Buzz? What about her and her category? David Carr or Lisa Kennedy?
I was one of the nincompoops that said Dreamgirls was going to win everything. Right when I saw it. I saw it in New York premiere, and it was, I guess, the crowd indexed quite gay, quite black, quite industry. Mm-hmm. And I reacted to the groundswell around me and said, well, clearly the race is over. It's going to win Best Picture. And I've been steadily fed those words out in the blogosphere all the rest of this season. In terms of Jennifer Hudson, she has been... not just, you know, you could take issue of whether that really is an actor's performance. In terms of her job out on the carpet as being, you know, this year's It Girl, she has been a total gas start to finish, irresistible, just loving every second of it. And it's hard when you watch that not to get the pom-poms out a little bit.
What about, as a last thought, Ellen DeGeneres as the host of the Academy Awards this year? Good pick?
You mean me? Well, Lee, I mean,
go ahead, David.
I think that she is a comedian that can do almost anything, has huge muscles, has demonstrated in her hosting of the Grammys that she knows what she's going to do. I was a big liker of Jon Stewart's performance last year, but Jack is right. You are pushing a big rock up the hill. And I think having a pro, this is rumored to be the longest Oscar show in history. They're cutting. And having a pro like Ellen DeGeneres to land all those jumbo jets, I think, is probably a pretty good pick.
David Carr, a columnist for the New York Times, the carpetbagger, blogger extraordinary. Thanks for being with us today, David.
Oh, it was an absolute pleasure.
Lisa Kennedy, a film critic for the Denver Post. Nice to have you with us from Denver. Thanks, Lisa.
Thank you so much, Jane.
And Jack Beatty joining us from Hanover, New Hampshire, On Point News analyst, senior editor from the Atlantic Monthly. Jack, thanks as always.
Thank you, Jane.
I'm Jane Clayson, in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.